Jennifer.
Hey, Jen, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
Everything good for tomorrow?
Well, on Friday? Not going to happen.
Friday. Oh, not going to happen?
Yeah, I'll talk to you about it later.
All right. All right. I'm on. Jen's on. Michael Charnas. Cristiano. Christy's going to be late, I think. Claire Coles. Joanne Weinberg. Hello, Joanne? All right.
Sarah's here. I don't know if you called me. Sorry.
No, I just... No one's answered so far. Maybe I'm not...
I was having trouble with my phone. I don't know if... I don't... It's probably just me.
Sarah, Leah, and Tatiana are there.
Yep.
Who else?
Dan is here.
Ken Jones is here.
Johan Jones.
Joe Nixon is here.
Sarah, Joe, Dan...
I'm here.
Savage is there, yeah. Bill.
Oh, Fadish Mirandas, yeah.
Rajesh is there. How about Bill and Joe? Nope.
Hannigan's on.
On what?
On the telephone.
Okay.
On drugs for medicinal purposes only.
All right. So let's see. Michael Charnas. Christy, Joanne, Claire, Johan, I heard he's there?
Yes.
Okay. Mike Setti, Sandra Mooney.
I'm here.
The Tories.
I'm here.
Okay. And NoFast?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Tom. James Reynolds?
Yep, I'm here.
All right. Bill and Joe. Miguel. Anyone else? Well, we have a problem in that we're not allowed to have calls without Bill or Joe. Not official calls, anyway. So,
can somebody
Jill,
text Bill?
You wanna give Bill a call or text him or?
I did.
All right, thanks. Okay. All right, how's everybody doing? Anything new and exciting in anyone's life?
Apparently we're pretty bored.
No one in Indiana. How about that?
Hello.
Hi, NIH is here. Sorry we're late.
Oh, all right. Yeah, we couldn't have a call without you. You know, it's not legal.
We were just doing weather reports.
That's usually a good go-to, yeah.
Sunny
okay,
and 72 so, in San Diego, in case anyone was wondering.
It's windy here. All right, so I'm missing Mike Charnas, Christy Petranko, Claire, Joanne.
Joanne is on. She is talking to someone sometimes, but says she can't hear anything.
Oh. Well, tell her to get off the audio and just get on the phone. That's her problem. She's trying to do it over the internet. It doesn't work real well.
Michael's having the same issue. I think he's going to try
to
the punch.
You've all disappeared.
All right, now, Claire, is that you?
This is Claire, yes. But your voice just went away for a while.
It's because you're signed up on their audio. It doesn't always work real well. It says you have a headset on. It says you have a headset on.
No, I don't. I have the phone on.
Oh, okay. That should work fine.
It is now.
All right. Hey, Claire, I think that's the group, and when Christy gets on, we'll ask her. But I think
that's great.
The group. And maybe John knows who they are. John, have you ever heard of a group called FAFASD?
FAFASD? No.
FAFASD. They're based in Michigan, and they're doing trainings. But Claire asked me, and I had never heard of it. But
I will send a note now to the Michigan group I know of and see if they know who they are and let you know.
I think the people who took over Diane Malbin.
Okay.
Training.
I'll let you know.
Okay. All right. Okay, so let me figure out what I'm supposed to talk about. I have an agenda somewhere. All right. Says Michael, can you hear us now?
Yeah, I just got on the phone. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And Joanne?
Yes, same here. Sorry.
All right. No problem. Mike Suddy? All right, so we'll just go with that.
Hello.
All right, Mike's there. Good.
And this is Christy. Right. I just made it on.
Hi, Christy. All right. So just a few notes before we start. I know that several people wrote me about wanting to or planning to attend the European FASD meeting in Norway. I selected a theme of e-health, and I sent them an abstract, not officially, but for their consideration, and I have not heard back from them, proposing myself, Mike Suddy, Sarah, and Christy in a 60-minute session. I think Tina also has put together a suggested symposium, and she has sent off something to them, but I don't know if she's heard anything. So all the other people who...
I think she has, Ed.
She has heard? All right.
I think she's heard positive. I think she's heard positively.
Okay, I know that she's had to send in 4 abstracts.
Yeah. I think
so,
that's what she said.
I'm assuming that it's moving forward. So I would suggest then that the other people who planned on going should probably submit for the paper session. Hopefully I'll know more in a week or so, and I'll let you know whether or not they like that e-health idea or not. And if they didn't, then we'll try to figure something else out. But you should probably start preparing abstracts. And the instructions are on their website. The Vancouver meeting on adolescents and adults. If any of you have a student who is going and presenting, there still may be funds available to support their travel. And all you need to do basically is to email Jill with the student's qualifications and what they plan on doing at the meeting. All right, now, after Dan talks, we've got to talk about the spring CFAS web-based meeting. We seem to be having problems finding a reasonable date for that. But first of all, John Hannigan was kind enough to get Dan Savage to put together a presentation on the New Mexico Alcohol Research Center, which is heavily focused on prenatal alcohol exposure. So, Dan?
It was hard work, but I was pleased to do it.
Being the difficult
well, Dan,
person that I am.
Dan sometimes can be difficult to work with. So.
Yeah. That's what Ed tells
yeah.
me. So
all right,
ready,
Dan,
ready
I'll call you, and I can see your slides.
Okay. So if everybody can see the slides, this is an adaptation of our reverse site visit presentation about a year and a half ago. So I'm just going to run right through this. Our center has been the title of our center for ever since it was a developmental P20 center that started back in 2008. We completed phase one in the middle of last summer, and we're in the first year of our phase two now, having received a favorable score on our review. This next slide basically sort of gives you an overview of what our focus has pretty much always been, which is looking at longer-lasting consequences of moderate prenatal alcohol. We focused on the more moderate levels of exposure in our animal models. And mainly, the majority of the people in our center group are basic biomedical scientists who are looking at using different tools to look at the mechanisms underlying the behavioral deficits associated with FASD. And we've used this little construct in the bottom left of saying we're focusing on mechanisms with the idea that hopefully things that we learn as we go along will help give new ideas for diagnoses and also for interventions. But there's really an interplay between these three entities, and there are examples even in our center where we have learned some things about diagnoses that have taking us back to asking other questions about mechanisms. So that's why we kind of look at it as a three-way construct. And we see this both for the preclinical as well as the clinical studies that are ongoing in the center. I just wanted to briefly mention that some of the highlights from our phase one are listed there, and these are all after moderate prenatal alcohol exposure. This was disrupting maturation integration of stem cells and interneurons. Jonathan had a lot of data to show how the crosstalk between different brain regions during learning is affected. Julia showed that there's delays in sensory processing and alterations in white matter integrity. Working with Ludmilla Bacariva, we found a number of serum and placental biomarkers that are altered after prenatal exposure in both preclinical and clinical studies. Aaron Milligan did a lot of work to contribute to the field on how even moderate exposure can predispose offspring to elevated pro-inflammatory responses throughout life, and that has become a major interest, I know, in the FASD field. And then some of our work in my lab leading to an understanding that prenatally alcohol-exposed animals may have differential responses to a variety of neuroactive substances. So those are some of the things that we did in phase one. In phase two, we shifted our focus to looking at cortical mechanisms underlying behavioral deficits. And we used this diagram just showing very simply the frontal and parietal cortex and the hippocampal dentate gyrus, where we've done a lot of our work in the past. And in phase two, we actually downsized a little bit to three preclinical projects, one clinical project. We have two pilot projects that are supported by a core, and then the administrative core. And the administrative core is myself as the director and Fernando Valenzuela as the associate director and scientific director of the center. So the first of the research components has been run by Andrea Allen and Aaron Milligan, looking at mechanisms of glucocorticoid resistance in prenatal alcohol, with the idea that the exposures have altered or actually created a misprogramming of glucocorticoid responding in the frontal cortex and the hypothalamus, and suggesting that these alterations are linked and contribute to altered stress and immune responding that occurs in prenatal alcohol-exposed offspring. And I'm not going to read all these slides, but I just wanted that their main focus has been looking at these regulators of glucocorticoid responding at various stages during fetal and early postnatal development. The next component is largely mine and Derek Hamilton's, and this is a continuation of the work that we've been doing, looking at how the histamine H3 receptor, which regulates the release of glutamate into the dentate gyrus, is altered. This is an inhibitory response that we have evidence now that suggests that that mechanism is heightened. It's a heightened inhibition of neurotransmitter release. And we're wanting to look at the mechanistic basis for how this has happened and then how drugs that we've shown can reverse both deficits in long-term potentiation and also some of the learning paradigms that we have established with our animal model, how these drugs can actually reverse those deficits. We're trying to use simultaneous electrical recording and looking at changes of glutamate levels in vivo in real time to try to correlate the physiological responses with changes in glutamate in the presence of these histamine H3 receptor agonists. So we're just sort of continuing to try to establish a good preclinical basis for why these drugs might be considered for clinical trials in children with FASD down the road. Component four is Jonathan Brigman's with Fernando. He's focused in the parietal cortex and looking at response inhibition. This is a preclinical correlate to what Julia Stevens and Dina Hill are looking at in the clinical component. So he's using clinically relevant EEG measures and mainly zeroing in now on the role of interneurons in oscillatory activity during attention and cognitive control. As an aside, the center is increasingly getting more interested in how prenatal alcohol exposure may have affected the function of interneurons, not necessarily decreasing the number, but maybe altering their function in ways that they are less capable of coordinating the synchronous firing of excitatory neurons in a variety of areas of the brain, and is using some novel techniques to look at the rates of fast-spiking interneurons. And all this is being done in vivo. And then in coordination with that, Julia and Dina are looking at response inhibition in clinical population using MEG and resting state MRI that we have over at the Mind Research Network facility. And in this round, they've moved to younger children to focus on with measuring impaired response inhibition and recording these task-induced neural oscillations that they study. And there's also some ideas, this is all very preliminary, but the possibility that certain kinds of neurostimulation techniques might have some utility in helping with some of the behavioral deficits that these kids have. And this project ties back to all three of the preclinical projects, and that's the integration in the center. Again, the two pilot projects that we have, one is Amy Gardner, who's a new faculty member in our cell biology department. Amy is an expert in microRNA mechanisms. She trained with Nora Peroni, that's a zero. And Amy is interested in looking at how certain microRNAs and other regulators are affecting the development of angiogenesis in the cerebral cortex during prenatal exposures. The idea here being that the cortical microvasculature is very important in helping for the migration and development of both neurons and glia, and she wants to examine the roles of these particular molecular markers in that process. And then 6B is Tuya Vu, who's one of our new faculty members, who is actually an expert in glioma tumors, but he's applying some of his techniques that he uses to look at the effects of PAE on migration, proliferation, and the differentiation and maturation of glial progenitors in astrocytes and oligos, and doing this both in intact animals, but also looking at clonal populations in cell culture. So those are our two pilots at the moment. The other thing the center is continuing to do is to help support the Center for Development and Disabilities Prenatal Exposures Clinic with the support of Marcia Moriarty, who is the director of that clinic. And what this slide is just showing that CDD has built up a network of outreach clinics around the state of New Mexico, and this network is being tapped into not only as a pipeline for possible subjects for the clinical studies that we're doing, but also contact points where we are trying to reach out for some outreach activities that we're doing as part of the center effort. And then lastly, the other thing that we're trying to do is build stronger ties with the alcohol research community. And I use this illustration in our reverse site visit to show that more regionally, we're the only alcohol research center really in the Southwest. We're trying to build ties with El Paso, Texas Tech, Texas A&M, and also other schools in the area that may have an interest in working with alcohol or fetal alcohol research-related activities. And then beyond that, we're trying to build stronger ties with some of the alcohol research centers along with CFAS and the Canadian Kids Brain Health Network. And we're trying to build those ties by deliberately encouraging seminar invitations to people that work at those centers and conversely have our folks go and attend and do presentations at those sites. So in that way, we are beginning to build a network. We've had six people in or are planning to come in this year to in the first year of our center-supported seminar program. And then lastly, I just wanted to mention that we are advised by a very distinguished panel of folks, five of which are part of CFAS and two, Charlie and Hermes J., who are not, but they're clearly we get a lot of help from these folks, and we also see these as opportunities for building even further interactions down the road. And just to remind the folks that are on that we do have our upcoming meeting in about a month, and we're looking forward to seeing all you guys there. So I think that was it. That's just a very quick, broad strokes overview of what we do, and if anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
Any questions? I have one question and one comment. Mm-hmm. And it's just for my personal edification. How long is the wait list now to get a diagnosis at one of the CDC centers?
I think the last time I asked Dina that question, I think it was about 4 to 6 months.
Wow.
And
so despite all of those... Despite all of those things that have been put up, you're still not able to keep up with demand.
Yeah, that's right, at this point. But now the other thing that they have done is they've actually hired more personnel, including a social worker, to work with the clinicians that at CDD to try to help begin to reduce that that lead time. And I think one of the things we want to talk with the PAC about when they come out is we saw that there was a there's a new initiative coming out from that's for a proposal to do you know what I'm talking about, Ed? I just met with Dina about this on Monday. It's not SAMHSA. It's HRSA. There's a HRSA initiative coming out to apply for money to help build support and training and interventions. And I believe that Marcia and Dina are going to lead a effort to see if we can try to secure some of the funding for that to help build out our capabilities.
And the other thing, I know your slides are a little old, but I am not the director of the Center for Behavioral Parasitology anymore, so Sarah and Jennifer might get upset about that.
I'll make that correction. I just pulled those out of the presentation this morning.
I kind of figured.
I realized a few things have changed in a year and a half, so duly noted.
All right. Any other comments or questions about the research going on or how the center operates? I mean, it's a very productive center. They have a very good group of people. And I think that the work they're doing is synergistic with what's going on at CFAS as well. So if there are any questions, bring them up.
And if they come up later, don't hesitate to email me or give me a call. So be happy to happy to interact.
I'll see you later next month, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Jill, do you want to pull up that doodle poll and put it on the screen? We're required to have a CPAS meeting via web. And obviously, this created conflicts, and I just wanted to ask a couple questions. So we're trying to find a day when everybody's green. Can you make that a little bigger? And as you can see, that's not possible. But my next question is, perhaps you don't need to have the whole day free, and maybe just be able to join us. So if we could pick a few of those dates with the fewest number of pink squares in it, and maybe see if some of those people could make part of that day, that would be helpful.
Ed, is it possible that we break it up over more than one day?
That's a good idea.
It's fine by me. I would have to ask Bill if he'd have any concerns about that.
Where is the meeting?
This would be a virtual meeting, WebEx?
Yes.
Okay.
So, Ed, I was going to make that suggestion. I don't think we have to necessarily have the meeting for an entire 2 days. I mean, if we could do the morning of one day or two mornings, consecutive days, or, or a morning and an afternoon, whatever works for the majority of people's schedules. I think it would be ideal to have everybody on all the time, but if we can't do that, I think that's still okay as well.
I thought we were only looking at the afternoon East Coast time because of the time change. Is that right?
Jill?
Am I wrong?
That's correct, right?
Yeah, we were trying to do a period of time, 5 hours, that would work for every time zone so that Mike wasn't on past, I think, 10 p.m., I think, was the cutoff. So.
Yeah. I just want to make sure. I don't think it's the whole day. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was looking that June 15th has a very few number of things, so we might be able to, do it on the 15th and Friday the 12th and then the 15th. And I think we just about cover everybody on that way. So we'll send out another doodle poll and try to chunk it down into a two-hour or two-and-a-half-hour block on 2 days, pretty close together. So we may be talking about the 2nd and 3rd of June, 15th.
But April 30th and May 1st looks good, possibly.
I think that I have a conference.
So the 31st in between.
I'll be flying to Italy, so I won't be able to make it. So you notice that my name's not on there. All right, so we'll work on this, and we'll try to get back to you, but please try to answer it as soon as possible so we can set it up, all right?
And, Ed, just to be clear, what is the window of time relative to East Coast time that we should be trying to keep open?
Trying to accommodate Mike, who's got an 8-hour difference with San Diego and the East Coast, so we don't want them.
It's just me, so I don't worry about it too much.
Pardon?
If it's only me that's got that problem, then I wouldn't put any constraints on that. I'm not too bothered.
We'll work on it. We'd like to have you involved, so. We will see what we can do to come up with it. If we break it down to a 2.5-hour period, we might be okay. So maybe, in fact, even email Jill and say, you know, I have class during this 2.5 hour period. I cannot make it between 10 and 11:30 or 10 and 12 on Tuesdays and Thursdays or something. You know, appointments that you can't miss. So, or when you're traveling. So we could start to narrow this down a little bit. All right. Any updates on data sharing? Leah, Tatiana?
Yep, we do. We have some slides that I think Jill is going to put up, maybe. I'm just like Ed, Jill. Will you make it nice and big for us? Okay. Perfect. All right. You want us to just kind of walk through? We just have four slides, Ed. Is it okay if Leah and I walk through these?
Absolutely. Start walking.
Okay. So in the usual fashion, Leah is sitting, if you could only, we don't have our cameras on, but if you could, you would see us sitting across the desk from each other, and she has bribed me to do the talking, and she's going to answer the questions. So, so what we've got is we've got a nice visual that I think is the result of a lot of different discussions among different groups about how can we have a policy that really is easy to understand and helps us clarify access to the data in the central repository. So let's remind everyone and kind of orient ourselves. So at the top, you've got archive data. That is the central repository, just so we're all clear what we mean by that. To the left are CFAS investigators, and then to the right are external investigators. So let me go down the right, because I think that's the easiest and very clear and straightforward. We have very nice policy. An external investigator who wants to request data for CFAS would sign a data use, if they've been approved, would sign a data use agreement. The data use agreement, and this is an important point, would have an institutional signature, which means the institution is, in essence, vouching for that investigator that they're going to uphold the policies. Any investigator who has external investigator who has access to data in the central repository, a particular packet of data, would be asked to provide a yearly report, and each year could either request another one-year extension to continue to use the data, or could say they're done and they will destroy the data. An individual going down this path, as part of their agreement, has a publication acknowledgement that indicates they will thank the relevant grants from which they had gotten the data that they requested, but there's no other guideline. They don't have to include a CFAS author. Okay, that, there's nothing new that I've just said going down that particular column, okay? I've just restated things we've already discussed and agreed to, okay? So I'm going to go down the left column now, okay? So the left is an individual who's a CFAS investigator. So anyone who has been, and this is sort of where we're having now a discussion, this is the part that has not been, I think we're trying to articulate clearly so we understand how this works. A CFAS investigator would be anyone who was involved in any phase of CFAS. So it could have been CFAS 1, 2, 3, or 4. It could be all of them. It could be one or two of them or three of them. Okay? A person who was involved in a particular phase or phases of CFAS can access the data from the phase in which they were involved. So if someone was involved in phases 2 and 3, they would continue to have access to the data in phases 2 and 3, as would any other investigator that was involved in that phase. They would not, though, have access to the phases that in which they were not an investigator in CFAS. So if you were involved only in CFAS 4, you would have access to the data in CFAS 4 as a collaborator within that period, but you would have to request to use the data in the earlier phases of CFAS. So just because you're in CFAS 4 doesn't mean you automatically can access everything in CFAS 1, 2, 3. Because you're an investigator in CFAS 2 doesn't mean you automatically get access to CFAS 1, 3, and 4. I feel like, I think that's probably, let me walk through this and I'll take questions. That's a fair way, so there's no automatic grandfathering in. Everyone's treated in the same way, and an individual would sign a data use agreement, but it wouldn't have an institutional signature. So in essence, if you've been part of the party at some point, you get some special privileges. You get a data use agreement, but you don't have to do institutional signature. You still have to do a yearly report for those phases that you're not that you weren't part of. You would have to do a request to either each year to either extend it or destroy it, just like somebody external. But those individuals who are sort of in this era here, they would follow the CFAS publication guidelines, they would do a concept proposal, and they would have other CFAS authors. So we're suggesting that if you've ever been part of CFAS, you get a little bit of special rules, maybe to benefit, but they're clearly articulated and everybody has got the same rules. And I think that's what we really want to have some discussion around. We're trying to avoid ambiguity and coming up with a solution each time we have what seems like a little bit of a different situation. And so let me stop here and let's take some questions.
I think it was very clear for me.
Yeah, very clear.
Does it seem fair? Anyone have any concerns?
No.
I think it's pretty fair.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. And this we'll distribute. So, Joe, we'll want to distribute the slides, too, so that, you know, anybody who's not on the call, I know it's being recorded, but I'd like to make sure people can hear the discussion or the statement, my description of it, and also look at the slides, because I know there's some people who aren't on the call, and I just want to make sure this is really transparent. So let's go on to the next slide.
Bill and Joe, any concerns?
Yes, I've got a procedural question. So if we go down the right side with an external investigator and they submit the data use agreement, then the committee reads the agreement or reads the request and then, you know, gives a thumbs up or thumbs down. Based on the merits of the science, et cetera. But what's the process on the left-hand side? Is it automatic?
Bill, actually, it's a great question. So what happened in that long line in there so that we're, sorry, I'm touching my screen, which is useless, of course, to the rest of you. External investigators going down to that data use agreement, that red line on the right, inside that red line is that request that had to be approved. The data use agreement only gets signed after the individual would have been approved. So this assumes you've already gone through that request and you've been approved. Now somebody could ask, as they say they need in order to make the request, maybe they need some additional information, but you can't see the data until you've been approved to get that data, and that's why you sign a data use agreement. So you don't need to sign that unless you've gone through with a request and have been approved. Does that make sense, Bill?
Yes. So the left side for CFAS investigators, will they have to submit, I think we were calling it a DAR, data access request.
So we've got a concept. Go ahead, Leah.
I don't know. We didn't really talk about that.
We didn't talk about that. We talked about the concept proposal, which is down there at the bottom, because they're not requesting permission. I'm just trying to think, do we have, so your concern is that concept proposal would need to be in front of the data use agreement for the phases in which they don't have approval. So that actually needs to be up there. You can't see my hand. I'm so sorry. It needs to be up there where we talk about requesting data from a phase in which they weren't involved.
So instead of a data use request.
It would be,
concept proposal.
Yes, they probably would need to do a concept proposal. So actually, we should move the concept proposal for the phase in which you weren't a part up at the top above the data use agreement.
Yep.
Okay.
That makes sense.
That's right. You're absolutely right, Bill. Thank you for flagging that.
Tatiana, this is Sarah. So just along those lines, so the concept proposals go through the publication committee, and the data use agreements go through the data use or data access committee. So would that just mean that the two, does that just mean the two committees work together, or how are you foreseeing that? I mean, assuming that what Bill was asking about was that the committee would be seeing these requests, the data use agreements.
I think it'd be nice if we could just do things really streamlined. Wouldn't it be easier if it could just be done once?
Sure. I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, I guess we're making assumptions, and that's fine as long as everyone, like for example, for internal investigators and previous CFAS investigators, that they communicate with the investigator who's the shepherd of the data, right? And
yep.
That would presumably go, I don't know where that goes, if that goes in the concept proposal. I mean, in general, it's fine. I don't want to make a big deal out of it. It's just, we'll see what happens when it happens.
Yes.
All right.
I do agree with Sarah that we should look to see if the same things are requested in the concept proposal as in the data
yes.
Access request, the DAR.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay.
Okay. You want us to keep going?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So I think we got Leah three
did
more.
Leah did a great job.
Leah did a fantastic. I'm just her voice as she's quietly taking notes over there. So the next three slides are really about what's going on in terms of the current CFAS and where we are in terms of our data and how we're doing in terms of getting our data organized and kind of where we still have some gaps and things that need to be done. So as you can see, there are folders right here in the central repository for the current phase four. All folders have been moved here to the central CFAS 4 central repository folder. All PIs have access to the folders for the projects above. And PIs will receive an invitation to the CFAS 4 central repository folder.
So that hasn't happened like, yet.
Going to happen.
It wasn't clear that
everyone was ready for that.
Yes.
All right. So basically what we're saying based on the discussions we've had, and let me make sure that I may not read that part. Let me just say it in my own words now. I'm so sorry, Leah. Is we've made the agreement that we are a consortium. Those of us involved in CFAS 4, which is everybody on this call, we are a consortium, we work together, and that we are comfortable sharing our data with each other. And so what Leah's saying is there's going to be an email that goes to the PIs, and they're just the PIs in CFAS 4, that will give everybody access to these folders. And so I know initially there was some hesitation around that, but it's our understanding that the group is now comfortable and ready to do that. And so we just want to say that out loud before the email goes out. Any concerns? All right. I'm going to keep going. Next slide, Jill. Okay. So we also want to talk about why that's so important. So there are some projects that are really self-contained, but there are a number of projects that really need to be able to work with each other in order to perform analyses. And so being the selfish little human genetics folks that we are, we are kind of flagging, for example, for Mike. So Mike really needs to be able to see alcohol exposure information for the images that he's received. He needs to know what the diagnosis is. He needs demographic data. He can't really analyze. I mean, I guess he can do some things, but he can't actually perform any analysis unless he has some other information, and he needs that from each of the projects that are sending him images. And similarly, for us in the genetics project, we're also receiving samples from the individual projects. And so for those individuals that we didn't recruit in the same kind of way, we need to also be able to check diagnosis demographic data. And so I think there are some other projects that are probably in the same position. I know that Sarah and Jeff, they've already kind of got things working so that they can be able to share back and forth. But I think it's important, for example, everybody needs dysmorphology. Everybody needs a number of other things that are really core concepts across multiple projects. And so to me, that's the most fundamental reason why we need to be able to have kind of folder sharing. Okay. And just to provide some assurance, remember, everybody is currently in CFAS. You know, if you're going to be writing a paper or doing analyses, you need to complete a concept proposal. And the reason that's so important is because everyone's going to have access to all the data going on in CFAS 4. And so it's important to communicate. People can't be writing papers without informing other people, getting input from other people. We're a collaboration. So that's my way to keep reminding everyone, and I think we need this slide kind of up here, reminding everybody each month, you know, the advantage of sharing everything across folders is really large, but we need to make sure everyone, you know, continues to sort of play by our rules, which is letting everyone know what you're doing. Anyone have any concerns with that? Okay, last slide. Okay, so the other piece then, which of course is very important, is the data set that's in the central repository for it to continue to be useful has to keep being updated. So we agreed to do a quarterly update of data, and so the next update is going to be due March 1st. And so everybody needs to get things updated by Monday, March 2nd, which is next Monday.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
It's next Monday. It's like the Monday, the first day of the month where we're all working. And just as a reminder, again, it's done quarterly, so that means the next time is going to be June 1st, September 1st. And just to remind everybody, we had our first update, upload of data, which was December 1st, and I think we had good citizenship on that as well, correct? We had one good citizen. We had Sarah, who was a very good citizen. So everyone's going to get a reminder the week before the upload, so you're getting a reminder now. You'll also get an email. And if people need a couple extra days because you forgot that this is going to be due on Monday, that's fine. Just let us know that you're going to get it done next week. But as Leah writes right here, failure to upload will result in merciless hounding. And if you haven't been hounded by Leah, it's merciless. And so I urge everyone to get your data uploaded because, again, it's not, you know, we're all sharing data with each other, and so we need to have relatively current data that we can all be using in joint analysis. And that's really it. Those are our four slides.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions, comments?
I would just like to say that I was very pleased not to hear any further concerns. I think this was advanced very, very well by Tatiana and Leah in addressing what concerns there had been on the past. And I think this is a great success for open use of the data across.
Thank you, John. And Leah's the worker. I'm just the voice. But thank you.
I agree. You did a great job.
That was great. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Sarah.
Yeah, that was really great. Very good.
Great.
Yes,
Sarah,
I'm here.
Can you have an update? You have an update?
I do. Only Kai could remember how to share my screen.
It says you have a power.
I have power, but I have, no knowledge. Can you see it? I'm sharing my PowerPoint slide.
Yeah, can you make it bigger?
It's a little display.
Make it bigger. Okay, what do you see?
We see presenter.
Swap big enough?
Some little
swap display is at the top.
Swap display. Thank you, Jill.
Ooh,
bigger.
There you go.
Okay. So this is a perfect segue from Leah and Tatiana's discussion about concept proposals. We had, I think, a record number of concept proposals this month, and we're so thank you, everybody. And they are listed here. And let's see. We didn't have any manuscript submissions, but we do have a paper accepted. And so we're excited about that. I think Christy's on, so congratulations, Christy, on this paper. I think, is this the first paper on the app, Christy?
Yep. Yes, it is.
Great. Nice. Congratulations. So I just want to continue to encourage you to submit your concept proposals. I think Tatiana really reiterated how important they are so that we all, I'll just go back and put them up, so that we all know what's going on and when collaborations can happen if they aren't already happening, and to continue to put in your concept proposals and let us know when your papers are being submitted and, of course, when they're accepted. That's it. Thank you.
Congratulations to all of those. I know Jeff's not on, but the Tories and Christy Petrenko, Cristiano, congratulations. All right, let's see. We got like 10 minutes, so I'd like to hear from any concerns, comments from NIAAA and the Science Advisory Board. So, Bill, Joe, you want to chime in?
Yeah,
chime in with any concerns or questions or comments?
No concerns here. I would echo the effort for the, getting the data access situation squared away. I would applaud everyone that was involved. Joe, did you want to?
Yeah, I, yes, this is Joe. I want to mention initiative we had submitted to the council meeting at February 6th, just this month, to propose the FOA for a developmental project that will be linked to CFAS. And that proposal has been approved by the council, and the gist of it is this will be another round of UH2 project. It will be open to all, and the awardees will be encouraged to set up a collaboration with CFAS so they can share resources and increase their impact of the outcome. And so we are doing the next phase in terms deciding when we can get this published, so that is not determined yet. And I just want you guys to know this has been proposed and it has been approved by the council. If you have any question, let me know.
And that's the NIAAA council.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. So I'll leave it at that. All right.
Go ahead. Bill, why don't you mention where they can find a video cast of the meeting if anybody interested to watch it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's been archived yet, but the council meeting was broadcasted on the NIH videocast system, and usually they're archived, so I'm not sure when that will be archived. Joe and I can answer some questions. We may be limited in the answers that we can provide, but we did want to let everyone know that it was discussed at council, just in case you weren't watching for the entire day 2 weeks ago. But so anyways, if there are any questions now, we can talk about it, or if you want to shoot us an email or give us a call, Joe would be happy to answer this question.
I am assuming that by the time any of this was able to be published and go out for competitive and then be reviewed, we'd be talking about a one-year pilot project in year 5.
We in our decision, I think we have to work with our extramural research activity director to figure out the earliest possible way to get this published so that you have a longer time period than 1 year. Let's say that's what happened to be what you just said, in just 1 year period, then we have to think through it, and we haven't finally decided what to do.
Yeah, so we know that it won't be a two-year project, or at least two full years with the last 2 years of CFAS-4, but we're trying to expedite this so that it's not just a one-year relationship in the final year of CFAS-4, but there's still some unknown variables, Ed, and we're figuring that out right now.
All right. Just keep us informed of what's going on, and
yep,
we'll all be good. Any other things from NIAAA? All right, Science Advisory. Yep, Science Advisory Board.
I have nothing further.
Neither do I.
Neither do I. I think I really like the data, and I never would have guessed it would have come this far. That's a great job.
Yeah, I echo that. Really, that's impressive. The level of cooperation to get where you are is, you should be quite pleased with yourself.
Don't say that.
Why not? And it's a lot of work, and it requires a lot of trust amongst the group, and it's very rewarding to see how much effort has gone into making sure that everybody benefits from the collaboration.
I just want them to keep working really hard. So. All right. Does anyone have any? And we have 4-6 minutes left. Anyone have anything that's just absolutely so exciting it needs to get out to the group?
We have Mike Suddy coming to town on Monday and Tuesday, and we're going to be working together on validating some of the 3D camera methodologies. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Me too. And looking forward to that. All right, then anyone, Michael, you have any comments?
Just congratulations to the group for getting an organized and very simple response to managing data. I think that was a terrific effort.
And Dan, I'll just thank you again for presenting today, and John for putting that together. And we'll talk next month. All right, so thank you, everybody, and I hope you have a good rest of the week. All right?
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.